Okay, today is December 7th, 2021, and we're sitting down with Jim Carlskin and Yvonne Carlskin. So it's Ed May, Monica Peck, and we're ready to get going. So we're going through the pictures of this of some Smeltania stuff. So you were saying Jim's dad started...
Archie Carlskin.
Yeah, we started way back when I was probably about 10 years old. And we had two shanties out here, and we rented them. And we had the lights in them. We didn't have electric lights out on the ice then. We had to haul batteries out there and had battery that went under the ice and went and lit the shanty. And undoubtedly, sometime 1-2 o'clock in the morning, their battery would go dead, and they'd come in, and I'd have to take another battery out to them.
Dang.
And one time I went out there, and there was a blizzard, and I got off the path coming back, and I couldn't tell where shore was. You know, snowing so hard, you couldn't see no lights. So I just stand there for a while, and about once every half hour or so, maybe a car would go by. Back then, there wasn't many cars, but driving that time of night. So it was quite an experience to start.
Yeah, I bet.
And we eventually moved into Boyne. Boyne City called my dad and wanted to go into a meeting. So we went into a meeting and they wanted him to move to Boyne City. So when we originally went in there, we went out right where the light is there under the Smeltania sign, and that's the way we went, which the pictures will show. Where we went back and forth. And we got brave enough, we started driving the cars out on there. And from there on, it was a lot of people. Morton F., which is now, what do they call?
Michigan Outdoors.
They come up and took pictures of the Christmas tree lines and the shanties and the lights and this and that. And they took it back and they broadcast it over television. And our phone never stopped ringing since 9 o'clock that night until after midnight. We had enough parties to run all winter.
Oh, wow.
From that one phone call from Morton F.
Jim, do you remember who it was who invited your dad out from the city?
Arbuckle was the mayor of Boyne City then. And Harry Dunsmore was chief of police, I think.
So what did Smeltania start as? So it just started as your two shanties out here in Advance.
We had two shanties here, and down the road here, Lance Russ had a couple of shanties, and there was a couple of shanties down here at Gaza Beach that
they
rented. So there was actually about four Smeltanias that under different names, but that's where it started.
So they were like these little communities on the ice then?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. That's cool.
Yep. I don't know where you want to go from there. What, you look at the pictures and ask me? Or...
Sure. So do you have any idea of what year that might have been that things got started? Oh, I've seen this photo.
That's Underhill and their shanties. They had shanties out there too.
So I see it says Smeltania City Hall, and so was it like it was basically a city on the ice then?
Yeah, that basically it was. And they capitalized on more on the names and the fancy part. They got different pictures in there showing different things on their smelt. Any that they had.
Jim, didn't you and Archie have a lot to do with the lights, the electric lights being run out from water?
Yes. I think it was the REA. Then they had some old copper wire that they didn't use anymore, so we run electric lights out. Bought some wire from them. Run the electric lights out, put Christmas tree lines out so they didn't get lost in the snow.
So that's how it all started, with dipping for smell, right?
Well, it wasn't dipping. You caught them on hook and line.
Hook and line, okay. All right.
Yeah.
So you'd catch
it from more at the mouths of the creeks.
Got it, okay.
Or in the river.
Yeah. Got it.
Jim, what do you remember about dipping?
Well, it was a wild madhouse, and Advance was the worst because it was a shallow creek and they could get right in it. Well, when I was young, I used to dip them and sell the smelt to the Standard Station in Boyne City, which was run by Harry Dunsmore then. And we'd get a penny apiece for them. Well, I wanted to be the first one into the river, so I'd get up the front of the line, and when they had lights, electric lights they turn on, that was a sign to go, and we'd all run to get our favorite spot. So I know many times I'd run down there and I'd try to stop on my spot, and they'd push me right out the other side. There were so many people.
Oh, wow.
It was 200-300 people there at times. It was backed up clear out to the road at the store waiting to go dip smell. Quite a sight. A lot of pictures taken of that over the years. I don't think I have any in here, but it was quite an ordeal on itself. Always somebody get over their waders or fall down and get wet. There was no sense of running to the river and trying to stop on the bank, because the people all running behind you push you right out across the river anyway. You might just as well get in.
Wow. What time of year was this?
In the spring.
Okay.
It smelt. Run.
Got it.
Yep.
So in the winter, when the ice was frozen, you'd use the hook and line to catch
them. Hook and line, yeah.
And then in the spring, you would dip. Got it. Okay. So they were around all the time then, it sounds like.
No. Summertime, in the summer, you didn't do nothing with smelt.
Okay.
They go deep or somewhere you couldn't find them. Fall and winter was the big part, and the spring dip, they come up to spawn.
Hmm.
The picture of your taxi service, what can you tell us about that?
A little Crosley?
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you about the time I went swimming in it. We were pulling the shanties off in the spring of the year, and we was down to the last shanty. We had two parties out at night. Me and my brother decided we'd pull them across the lake and put them down here on the shore so we wouldn't have to work on Sunday. So we had them all pulled off except the office and that one shanty. Well, we pulled the one shanty across and started, and we say, well, there's 29, there's 28. They were froze over. Drove that Model A right in the hole. Down she went. Tilted to the right. My brother, he went on the right side, and I got up. We had that shanty tied right up tight behind us so it wouldn't sway. And I just got up against the ice, and I was hollering for him, and the weight of the car was tipped the shanty up and ripped the sleigh right off and under it, and down it went. And of course, the shanty plugged a hole, and I was hollering for my brother, and finally he popped his head up, and we had to actually pin me right against the ice. He got up out. Anyway, it was 3 days fishing the Model A back out, and we picked it all the way back up from the bottom with come-alongs and get it up where we could get the bumper on the ice, or get a hold of it with chains and pull it out on the ice. That was an experience of a lifetime.
Did it ever run again after that?
The funniest part about that is my brother took it home, and he took the distributor and the carburetor and everything. It had gas and oil in it. And set the carburetor and some of the stuff behind his stove at home and let them dry out for about a week. And he put it all back together and towed it down the road, and the Model A started right up. We didn't think it'd ever run again.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
Wow, that's pretty cool.
How did you set the electric poles out there, Jim?
Well, on first ice, we'd get about, say, 2-3 inches of ice where you could just get on it, and we would carry the electric poles out, and we had cleats nailed across the bottom. We spud a hole, set them down in the hole, and then let them freeze in, and then we run the electric wires on it. I took a bath doing that too. I was carrying two posts on my shoulder and dragging one, and I was following where my dad had been walking. Well, it come with any slushy spots on top of the ice. And I didn't see his tracks, but I said he was going in a straight line, so I decided I'd follow him. Well, I started across, through I went.
Oh, man.
I had the logs, of course. They kept me from going right under, but it didn't take me long to scramble to get back up off in that slushy spot, I'll tell you that. All kind of experience you have when you're working on ice day and night. And you'd be surprised how neat some parties could be, and you had them in the shanty would be so clean and stuff the next day, and the lines would be hung up nice and neat. The next one, there'd be peanut shucks all over the floor, beer bottles and stuff. You have to have a sleigh out there to haul all the junk in that they left in the shanties, but that's part of the project. It was just amazing how the different parties would be. Hey, this.
Well, do you remember what your dad charged for the shanty?
$10 a night. That furnished the bait. And the reels were all on the wall. They didn't have to furnish nothing. All they had to do was bring their lunches and stuff what they wanted. The biggest problem we had there is that line, as you see it in some of them pictures, goes out. We was out there, I don't know how far, I would say 300 or 400 yards, and people would throw stuff on the way out. You'd be surprised the difference in people and how clean some could be and how bad they were. There's Arbuckle.
This one or this one?
Arbuckle's in the center. That's my dad, the other one.
Okay.
This is my dad over here.
Got
Arbuckle
it.
And what the heck's the other one I'm trying to think of? The one that see the picture, maybe that'll break
jog
my
your
brain.
Memory?
Underhill.
Underhill, okay.
Yeah. Yep. The dad's, all the city fathers out there for picture taking.
Do you remember how many years this ran, Jim?
How many years, what?
How many years this operated?
I don't, Ed, but quite a few. I know it started out when I was, like I said, probably 12, 13 years old, and my brother and me and my dad, we was all running it, and I had, I think at that time, 3 children, and my brother had 3 or 4, and so it was from 13, 14 years old to we had children that old, so it's quite a few years.
Did you have any cross experience with Lance Ivy from the?
You mean for?
Did you share shanties at all or work together?
Oh, if we had more bookings than we handled, we would send them or give them their number. Yeah. So we shared that way, and you'd be surprised how many people would be up here on a weekend just to fish.
So would they stay overnight in the shanties, or would they just spend the whole day there?
Some would spend all day and leave. Some would spend all night and come in and be daylight in the morning when they come in. They just stay right there. And there's some pictures in there, the smelt they caught. Some parties caught up to a wash tub full, and another party might catch...
Like this one?
That's a party that dipped the rivers.
Got it,
Yeah. They were dipped out of the rivers. And that's the shanty, and it's part of the power lines going out. I think there's power lines out there. Yeah, should be anyway.
Yeah, these are the poles that they set.
Got it.
And that's the...
And that picture with all the smelt dipped there, that was Woody Hartlip and his family dipped him out of the Boyne River.
Oh, sure.
What they ever did to that many smelt, I don't know, but they had a pile of them.
So Woody Hartlip is Woody's Bait Shop, Woody?
Woody's Bait Shop, Woody, yeah.
Got it, okay.
Yeah.
So his wife then just celebrated her 100th birthday not that long ago, yeah. Yep. That's cool.
A good deal of the aerial photos that you'll see in that collection were done by Royal Watson.
Royal Watson. Very cool.
That was our office. We had a big screen minnow net or trap net or full size of the hole. We kept our small minnows and stuff in to keep bait to the shanties. And every 2 hours, we'd go around with a bucket of bait and see that they had bait and wasn't running out.
Have you noticed a difference in the ice on the lake over the years?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Very much so.
Yeah, it seems like, I remember my grandparents talking about riding snowmobiles across the lake, and you just don't really do that very much anymore. It's really...
We used to go to Charlevoix across the lake every Sunday.
Oh, my gosh. When would the ice be frozen enough for you to be able to do that? Like, what time of year? Like,
well, usually around the first of the year.
Okay.
Yeah, before it got thick enough to get enough ice to get the shanties and stuff out on. But one time, we pulled them from here into the Tannery Corner, where it's just condos now, but right there on the big bend where they all swim. We'd go on the ice right there with the Montelet and run along the shoreline and out, take the shanties out and drop them off and go back and get another one out here until we had them all out on the ice. Well, I pulled some out one night and next morning we were hooked onto one. I took it and we drove out on the ice and pressure crack had went through during the night. And I was coming up to that. Was moving too fast. I couldn't stop. If I stopped, I'd be right on the crack because of slippery ice. So I just gave her more gas, went across, and when I got to that ice, I could see about 4 inches of ice from that other float. It was, I'll tell you, when I took that shanty out and dropped it off, well, I had to go back across that to get back to shore. I wasn't going very slow when I went across it. It couldn't have been much weight on the ice. But you have all kind of experiences on ice. Is just, you never know what's going to be there the next day.
Huh. Must have been scary as a mom having your kids going out on the ice, I imagine.
Oh, yep.
Yeah. Very cool. So Smeltania then, it wasn't necessarily like a festival on the ice. It was this community that would go from like the 1st of January to like early spring, and then they'd pack it up and do it all again the next year.
Yep.
Got it.
Didn't you end up with 30 shanties?
Yes, we had 30 shanties at the last. And then the smelt died off. It had a cycle. One spring, you could go out and the snow would melt it off and stuff enough that you could see through the ice, and it was just white under the ice where the died and come up under the ice. And don't know what caused that phenomena yet. We blame it on they run out of bait or something to eat because it got to be so many of them in the lake that they were just, I think they did nothing to eat. They just plain starved to death. So that was the end of Smeltania.
And it happened that quickly. Like, it was just one year.
One winter. Then wow. The spring, when we were pulling shanties off, there was thousands and thousands of them under there dead.
But wow.
Well, if I remember right, you and your dad had an office down here by Porter Creek.
That was for the smelt run. Yeah, we'd take one of our shanties and put up down here by the old mill. And wouldn't let nobody into the river to fish until there was an efficient enough for smelt coming up. Because if they would go down there and have lights in the mouth of the river and stuff looking, everybody, if smelt wouldn't come up. They kept them scared out. So we'd give the smelt a couple of nights a run, and when they got decent enough to dip, then we would open it up. And at 10 o'clock, 12 o'clock, and 2 o'clock, we would turn the lights on. We had lights strung over the rivers. And people about stampede themselves getting into the river to fish. It was, some would have big, long handle nets, and they'd swing them trying to dip, and they'd crack somebody behind the head.
Oh, my gosh.
It was just a free-for-all. A lot of people went just to watch.
Wow.
It was really quite an ordeal.
So would they pay you to dip in the river then? Is that what it was?
No, that was nothing. We just regulated so everybody could catch some fish.
Oh, that's nice, yeah.
Well, that was a depression time period too, wasn't it, Jim?
Oh, it was. There were some hard times. It wasn't. I don't think that was depression, because that was about, I was in school. So it must have been somewhere before 50s. I graduated in 1950. So it probably was in 46, somewhere like that. 1946. They took loads and loads of smelt out of there. A lot of people would go down there to get some smelt. People would be dipping and dumping them in their buckets on shore. Somebody'd walk along with a bucket, and somebody'd swing it up to put it in their pail, and they'd stick their bucket there, and they'd dump in their bucket, and they'd just go on to the...
Oh, jeez.
It was a circus. It really was comical.
Did you like smelt? Like, were they good?
Oh, they were good, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think you'd want to eat smelt with trout or something like that. It's too much of a contrast, but just to fry up a mess of smelt, it was very good, I thought.
So you just fry them in a pan? Is that how you eat them? Yeah.
What size were the smelt that you remember, Jim?
Well, the biggest one that I ever remember catching was 14 inches, and everybody said, oh, there was never one that big. But they used to have a smelt contest in Boyne for the smallest smelt and the largest smelt. And so the year they did that, we was young, we probably didn't know no better, but we shouldn't have. But we had advantage over most people because we was on the ice fishing, and we ended up with both the large smelt. We had a senior division and junior division. We had all four divisions, but when we come time to turn them in, we only took one for the kids and one for one of the seniors and let somebody else have the other ones because... Didn't look too good for us
to win them all. Yeah.
No, it wasn't. So.
There was a old tale in Boyne about a DNR officer being allowed to take a bath during one of these smelt runs. Do you remember anything about that?
Take a bath?
Well, he was thrown in.
Oh, it was the mouth of the river. But I don't remember all the details of that, Ed A. Maurer. I remember a deer fell in there one year, and they was swimming back and forth, and the guy was trying to get it across, get it out, and they finally got the deer out, and they got it up on the bank, and by that time they had I'll bet there was probably 100 people around there watching this poor deer, and when they got it out, the DNR had to put it down because it said it was too exhausted and wouldn't live. So that was an awful reminder of what can happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If you don't mind, I'd like to see if you can give us any insight on Advance.
That's more than
you grew up here. Mm. Any insights on Advance, on the community?
What about it again, Ed?
You grew up here.
Yes.
Yes. Can you give us any stories of Advance itself, the buildings, the history, what you know about Advance?
Well, I know all of it about the old grist mill and stuff, the years it was there, and as it went down, and we built a berm up around and remade the pond so that they could fish in it and stuff, and the DNR and them planted brook trout in there. But anyway, we had one heck of a storm and over flooded the pond, and it took it out. But we, us kids, we were just kids back in that age. We had a lot of fun. We'd go down there and dip smelt behind it in the night before people even knew they were in. They'd go up in there underneath that big grinding stone they had. The old stone was in there where they ground flour, and dip smelt out of there. Lots of smelt back then.
It's kind of interesting to consider that Jim's home used to be the school here in Advance.
Yeah, that's what Ed was saying when we were pulling up, that this used to be the school here.
Yep. He went to kindergarten here.
Oh, wow. That's cool. When did you guys move in here?
I would think in the early 40s.
Okay.
But we moved in here in 80.
Got it. So did your family convert it from the school to a house?
Yes.
Got it.
It was just, when Dad bought it, it was out here in the front, there was like a 12-foot entrance, and they had two doors to enter, and the rope to ring the bell for school and stuff, all was up on the roof. And come in and ring the bell. They wanted us for anything, they could ring the bell, we could hear it all over Advent. Huh. Anywhere it was, let us know it was time to come home for supper.
That's awesome. We never did find a picture with the bell on it.
Oh, really? We'll have to look and see if we got something in our files. So it was called, was it called the Advent School then? Is that the name
Advent
of the school?
School.
Okay.
This is the one, this is the school building. It was written up in Perry Whiting's journal. The kid ran up the hill, kicked the door of the school, and he was a little slow in running away, so he got caught.
Oops.
Oh, yeah, there's been different things happen. Back when my dad and them bunch was running around, they had some kind of an old buggy or something somebody left here. I think it belonged to the school teacher or something, but he had it here. They took ropes and drug it up, put it up on the peak of the roof.
Oh, geez.
There's buggy was. Stuff like that. Back then, what the hell did kids have to do? Well, no TV, no nothing.
Yeah. Cause mischief.
Different time of the life. Was it your granddad that had used to have railroad ties here for sale or something like that?
Yes, they cut railroad ties here, and they had down here on the left side of the river, he had a dock there, and they would load the railroad ties on the barge, and they would ship them to Chicago. Dad always said, well, he logged off all of the peninsula here, but I hear conflicting stories where logging and railroad ties were a lot different in size and stuff, so I don't know how that really worked out, but they shipped a lot of railroad ties for railroad into Chicago from here.
So you grew up here?
I was born up on the farm, which is behind us here. We had a little two-bedroom house with, I think there was five or six of the kids back then, and we just plain outgrew the house. So we eventually moved down. We had a house down over here that Dad had bought, and then the school went up for sale here at, I don't know, somewhere in the 40s, it was when Dad bought that and we remodeled it.
Okay.
moved in here.
What would you, if you, what would you say the biggest change has been to the area that you've seen over your life?
The biggest what?
Change. The biggest difference from when you were young to now. It's probably a lot.
There's a lot of difference. It used to be that we got on a weekend, we got a nickel or a dime, we'd go to the store and buy candy, you'd come out with a whole bag full. Now you go down there and you take a nickel or a dime, you can't buy nothing.
Yep.
And the store they used to have at the front two windows were laid out trays, and they had just solid candy laying out there. You stick your nose up to the window and watch all that goodies in there, but
penny
didn't have
candy.
Any money to buy them with.
Penny candy at that time.
Yeah, yeah, lots of penny candy. And you got a good sized piece of candy for a penny too.
Well, you consider that originally Advance, when Porter built his mill here, there was the first grist mill on this end of Pine Lake.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And the Indians used to come in and bring corn in here to have it ground.
Oh wow.
And that would be the time period of your great-granddad.
Yep.
So you've had generations of family here.
Yes.
Yeah. That's pretty cool.
The Carlson name is in the first, like, eight families to settle in this area.
Oh, really? Oh, wow. Oh, that's cool.
That's one of the...
Wow.
That's a bag out of the grist mill.
It's in good shape, too.
Yeah.
That's really cool.
Yep.
Well, did you think of anything else, Jim, that occurred in this area or during Smeltania?
Ed, I can't remember all of them. There's so many, many that just, you know, my granddad, he had two or three stores here in Advance, and consequently, over the years, they all burnt down. He had the Advance store, he had two different times he had that built and lost it. Fire.
This must be Smeltania at night.
That's
huh?
The lights.
That's
yeah.
Pretty
we
cool.
We had lights marking all the wires and stuff. Then when snowmobiles got prominent, we had two or three incidents where they running out on the ice and hit one of the electric lines and break a wire. Oh. Everything being in the dark, we'd have to get out and repair the electric quickly. Make the rest of the night.
That's pretty sweet.
That's a lot of fish to catch with a hook and line overnight.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. It seems like it would be a lot.
Yeah.
It must have been fun.
Oh, they had balls. Some of them. Like I say, some went on drinking parties, some went on, I don't know, have had, well, one guy come out one night and wanted to rent a shanty. He said he wasn't going to fish. He had his girlfriend with him. He said he didn't want to be disturbed. So he had all kind of people come out to rent a shanty. It just didn't, or just, the hotel was full, everything was full. Some place they didn't have no place just to get in out of the weather, I guess. But it was interesting, just a different situation you come up against. And we had telephone out on the line. We had telephone lines run. The electric light up, and then there had a lower line of telephone on it. Didn't have no cell phones then. You had to dial it up.
Yeah. I know it was funny because I saw in the picture of the taxi, it had the letters in the at the beginning of the phone number, mm-hmm. the J-U, yeah, this one right here.
Yeah.
Yeah, It's like, yeah, you know that's an old photo when they've got the letters in the phone number. Yeah, that's cool.
I don't know if we have the photo in this group, but what was the name of the girl that was on top of the taxi?
Debbie. That was my brother's oldest daughter. Debbie Carlskin.
Oh.
That would be Debbie Carlskin.
Okay.
There, that's the photo right there.
Oh, got it. Okay.
Yes. Aw. It was in at the dock. We were waiting for somebody, or he was, and he set her up on the roof to take pictures.
She looks like she's happy to be there.
Yep.
That's very cool. So has the smelt ever been back?
Never in any quantity. They get to be a few, and when they put the walleye in the lake, that was the end of the smelt, because that's a good diet for them to eat. And then lake trout ate smelt. They put smelt in for the food for the lake trout. Well, it ended up the smelt ate the lake trout spawn, so they wasn't no many lake trout to grow in the lake. The smelt kept cleaning up the eggs. So.
You had to watch a little towel. They would wrap a little towel around the, and you'd watch that go, and then you'd hit the
reel.
Hit the reel.
Oh, really? Oh,
wow. It wasn't really a towel. It was just a little feather off of the towel, a little piece of string tied in the line where you could see it. And go sideways one way or another.
Huh.
And then you hit the reel.
And that's how you'd catch them?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
Yeah, I know, well, fishing, everybody knows the funnest part of fishing is when you get a fish on the line, right? So if you were catching that many fish at one time, it must have been a lot of fun.
Yes, it was. Yeah. It was.
But I'll tell you, it was a lot of work keeping them lines straight. A lot of parties, when they get ready to go home, they'd leave. They didn't even reel the lines up. They left them right down on the lake. Well, by morning, if it happened to be a bigger fish take a hold of that, they would go around and they'd pick up all eight lines, and they'd be around and there'd be a big ball up under the, you'd have to cut them off, put all new lines on. They just wrap them right up, and you can imagine what would happen. They keep going around and around with a big fish on there. They can only go so far. It really made a mess. So that was my job most of the time, straightening up all the lines.
So how would you clean smelt? Would you clean them, or would you just eat them whole?
Oh, no, we cleaned them.
You cleaned them.
Yeah?
You cut the head off and slit the thing down, or the belly down. And then you would take the guts out. And
seems like a big job for this many fish.
Oh, it wasn't so bad when you catch them out of the shanty. You get a water pail for something, that ain't bad. But when you dipped them out of the river, I remember one night I had a wash tub full. And I cleaned smelt most of that night. Went to bed, the next day I clean smelt most of the day to get that. That's a lot of work, you know, washed up smelt.
Yeah.
You usually ate the bones.
Okay.
In it, but you would clean up.
Did you can the smelt too?
No, never canned smelt.
Yeah.
Canned salmon, but never canned smelt.
Do you guys do much fishing now?
I haven't did any really this year. I guess I went fishing walleye the first day of walleye season, and I went out and fished bass on opening day and caught some. But the doc said, didn't think I should go out in the boat alone. Not anymore. It's just not at my age, so I haven't went out much. In fact, I don't think I've been out only twice this year, once for bass season and once for walleye.
Hmm. Those darn doctors taking away all your fun.
Yeah.
Well, we really shouldn't go out.
Yeah.
You'll be 90 next year.
Wow. Oh, I see. There's the
article. Morton F., which is now Michigan Out of Doors. He was up here. That's probably when he took part of the pictures that was on TV and stuff. And man, oh man, what a night that was.
When was that? Do you remember?
I don't remember the dates on it. Probably right at that paper. Probably would tell you pretty close to what date
it was. So this was 84.
There was a picture in here of a man with a camera in his hand.
And that was...
Yeah, that would have been me.
That would have been more, no.
Mm-hmm. That's when he was here taking the picture.
That one?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And this is the tracks from coming from town.
Dang.
Yeah, we didn't used to. We had our tree lines that could walk back and forth off the city dock. But this was over by where the roundhouse was, where the traffic light there is in town.
Mm-hmm.
That's where we had to get on the ice with the vehicle. We couldn't get on at the dock. But over later years, they give us access so we could come down where that little boat ramp is there now at the city dock. We would use that parking lot and drive out from there on the shanties. But you had to watch because every year, about spring of the year, started to get a little warm. You'd get a pressure crack and the ice would buckle.
Hmm.
And we had a lady from Boyne, we should have knew, we had signs up on shore, the ice wasn't safe, and she drove around the sign in the barricade, and away she went, she hit that pressure crack. Went right out, and there her car straddled the pressure crack. It had held the car up. She swam out of it and got ashore, but they went up on the city dock and got a wrecker. Had to pick the car off and picked it up with the wrecker to put it up on the dock to get the car off.
Man.
But that close, she come to be in history. It's a lot of experiences happen when you're on ice. Is never dependable. You never know.
And today it's snowmobile.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do you ever remember them using horses on the ice, Jim?
Yes. Yep. My granddad or some took a load of logs across from somewhere over on, I don't know, State Park or Horton Bay or where, across the ice. Just Chula Vista was the closest point to get off. Well, he got all the way across the ice, just about into the dock, and the sleigh and team and everything went through. Mm. And the history, the story is that sleigh and stuff is still down there.
Oh, wow.
They never got any of it out. There was about, I don't know, 70, 80 feet of water there where it went through. That's that deep point.
My dad lost a pair of horses in Ironton.
Oh, wow. He was just crossing the lake and they mm-hmm. fell through. Oh, my. Wow.
Did they ever do any smelter on Ironton?
Yes. No.
Well, there was a little creek down by my dad's there that they would... He always talked about a preacher coming up and going down there to fish. There was a little creek.
So did you grow up in Ironton?
Yeah.
You did?
About a mile from the ferry.
Okay. Wow. So how many kids do you guys have? Let me see all your pictures of your cute little...
Great-grandkids?
We got seven.
Does that help?
Yeah.
Seven of them, I think. one in Traverse, then five back here. So I guess that was six.
Mm.
Great grandbabies. They're a handful, too.
This, are they?
This little gal, she caught that fish herself.
And her That's dad, pretty good.
Her dad made her land it by herself, too. And she wasn't very big then. I was afraid there goes one of my poles.
Oh, yeah.
When she got it in, I was surprised.
She was only five, I think, there.
She looks like a little peanut.
Oh, she's just a little. Yep. This is our hobgoblins that were Halloween.
Oh.
Well, the Carlsons was some of the first in this area, and it's just expanded.
Yeah. Yeah. It's pretty cool.
There was a shoe store here in Advance.
Oh, really? I didn't know there was a shoe store.
Oh, there was a hotel. There was a Von Platten had a mill here. Porter put in a grist mill and then hooked a small sawmill to it. And White from Boyne City on Von Platten bought a lot of property here. Now, when I say property, they bought the trees on the property.
Well, didn't you have an uncle or something that had the shoe store?
My granddad. Dad's dad. I had some pictures of that mill. I don't know where.
I think you gave them to Eddie. Did he bring them back?
I didn't give them to Eddie. I don't know.
I think Eddie brought him back.
I've got pictures at home that I copied, and I haven't returned yet.
Oh, right here, honey.
They're right here.
This is a cool picture.
We've got all of them.
Do we?
And that was the Russ Ivy smelting.
Oh, that's the one you were asking me about?
Right.
So did they regulate? Could anybody do shanties on the lake? Or was it, like, were they limited to how many people would allow to do it? Or just whoever got out there first?
Yeah, who got there first?
Got it.
A lot of times, shanties would be within 8 foot of each other. We've had people move up to where we had a shanty out individually right against it where you could see his line go up and down.
Oh, wow.
On their shanty. So it was, here's Underhill's outfit.
Oh, that's cool.
You've got some pictures of it.
I think you had the mill in there.
I thought it was in here.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Stackus' funeral home. There's a couple pictures of the Ironton Ferry.
Yeah, I'd like to borrow those.
You haven't seen these ones?
I haven't seen those yet, no.
There's a Masonic temple when it burnt.
Oh, yeah.
This is the Horton Bay store.
I think Gene made these for us.
Looks like maybe they were part of a calendar.
Could be. I think maybe they were. I don't know, sure.
Oh, there's the Eagles.
Here's a boat that used to run from Moist City to Charlevoix. I thought this
I haven't seen that photo. That's the one
of the Advance store that burnt.
Oh, this was down there by Deer Lake.
Oh, really?
Not in there.
They're not in there?
Not in there.
Oh, here you go, Ed. Here's one.
I think Eddie contributed part of those.
Probably.
Jim, these I'd like to borrow from you so I can copy them. There's a lot of history here, and every time you turn around, you're finding more of it.
Yeah.
This is a cool picture of the heart lips. Eric, one of their sons, he moved out of the area, and he recently moved back. I'm wondering if maybe he's probably in this photo. I don't know.
I don't know what they did with that many smelt.
Yeah.
They couldn't have cleaned that many. They must have just sold them in the round or something. I don't know if he had that bait store.
Could you use them as bait at all, or no?
Did I?
Or if they were small enough, could you use the smelt as bait?
Oh, definitely.
Yeah?
Yeah. For lake trout or salmon, they like smelt.
Oh, yeah.
Did you taste this?
I've got some pictures at home,
yeah. Yeah. Of the mill.
Mill burner?
Yes, I've got the mill burner.
That's
yeah.
You go.
Okay.
That's the grist mill?
Yes.
Burning? Okay.
Grist mill's in it, and the bagging house is in it. So that bag took them, or they bagged the grain after they ground it into flour. I guess they made flour there.
So I've been in contact with the Whites and asked them for any information that the Whites might have had of Advance. And they said no, they went out to a point out here, further out past here. Hayden's Point? Does that ring in? Hayden's Point?
That's down here, ain't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's where the White family used to come and have parties there. But they have no connection to Advance. The only connection they had here was when the Von Plattens moved their mill to Boyne City. And that was their son that took over that. Because Von Platten Sr. went north up into Iron Mountain area. And that's, I found this out in the last 4 or 5 weeks from
Oh, really?
From
wow.
Plate.
Wow.
So, but that's history. And I'm trying to work with Monica to get interviews done and get things done before we lose everybody that remembers this. A little embarrassing now because I start to tell people about this and I'm looking around for her, you don't know this, and then I realize I'm the oldest one in the room.
Yeah.
I saw one of my old Boy Scouts and I thought to myself, damn, he's 70 years old.
Yeah.
Then I realized how old, you know, how long ago it was that I was Scoutmaster. It's just this. It's creeping up on me.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think about, like, my kids, you know, I have 2 girls who are in high school, and then I have a son who is 20, and they, like, to even, what a grist mill even is, they would have no idea, you know? So.
Well, that's, you have something in common that I know. Jim, you have remarried. He has children. You had children, and Monica had her children, and then her next husband's children, and they had to move to Gaylord so they could find a place with 5 bedrooms.
Yeah, we.
It's just. And here Pat and I have got Kelly, and it really quits.
Yeah.
But it's beautiful in a way. It's.
I took care of Kelly the first 2-3 years?
You helped take care of Kelly when we had brought her back from the hospital.
Yep.
So oh, that's
for
cool.
two or three years, I took care of her.
And Shayla made the comment one time, she was Kelly's first babysitter, and I listened to it, and it was not the time to correct her because she was in her dotage. But it's just, you know, not quite.
I was her first babysitter. They brought her home from the hospital.
Aw. Wow.
Until my mom got sick, and then I had to go home take care of mom. Mm.
So did you grow up with Pat then?
Well, Pat and my brother went together.
Oh, I see. Got it. Okay.
For a while.
Okay.
And then we
then Eddie stole
Eddie,
her away. No.
Yeah, and then Eddie, from the day he came here.
We've been good friends.
Yep.
Oh, that's cool.
Jim helped me get into the union, and I was a carpenter, and then I went to Millwright, and Jim's helping me get into the organization, helped me get into Saudi Arabia, Bolivia, et cetera, et cetera. And I've done that ever since. So it's, I look at Jim like a dad, and yet I remember I'm not that many years younger than Jim. But it just depends on how you look at it, and you accept people for what they are. And if you don't like it, well, then don't criticize them.
Yep, we've been friends for years.
And we've run into each other and bumped into each other in all different directions. I spent years in the Masonic fraternity, and Jim was a master mason from Garden City.
Okay.
I didn't know that for a while. It's the different things that you run into and you do.
Yep.
Different friends and different families. Everybody's connected around here somewhere.
Yep.
If you don't believe it, give it 6 months.
Yeah. That's what my parents would always say. Don't date anyone from Boyne City because you're probably related to them. So.
Who are you married to, hon?
His name is Jordan Peck. He's not from the Pecks around here. My maiden name is Follett. I don't know if you know Stan and Ruth Follett. Those are my grandparents.
Yes, I do.
Yep. Those are I'm the oldest of their grandchildren. So, yep.
Well, it's kind of, we're always sure to obey our parents' wishes. Pat's mother told her when she goes down to Florida, "You remember Sheboygan, we told you not to have anything to do with anybody in the Coast Guard." That's true. And when you go to Florida, don't ever get on a motorcycle. Okay, the first time I saw Pat's mom and dad and grandma, I was on a motorcycle and I pulled them over down in Florida. And Frank thought he was being arrested. And I was looking for them, we knew they were coming, and I saw a car with Michigan plates. So I pulled up alongside, told him to pull over. He pulled over and I told him who he was. And of course, here's her mother. Don't go with anybody in the Coast Guard.
Yeah.
Don't get a motorcycle. So it's strange, but it works.
I took a ride with Eddie on the motorcycle.
Only one, huh?
I'm not responsible.
Only one. Well, we went up. My dad was building a house, and we went up on a board, and you could see down in the hole. Well, I took one ride.
Yeah, that would be it for me, too.
Not me.
Yeah.
But it's been a good working relationship for years.
Well, thank you both so much for letting us come and talk to you a little bit and capture some of that Smeltania history.
Hey, yeah.
We ended up with a dog. We weren't going to have another dog, but my sister is in Grandview.
Oh.
And her babysitting her dog.
Until she gets out of Grandview?
She's never going to get out of Grandview. No. I guess we're going to be babysitting for a long time.
Well, her son has 5 cats.
Oh.
And they didn't get along with the dog, so we took the dog.
Well,
seems like a nice dog.
Yes, he is good.
A very good dog.
Well, we've all had dogs, and I don't know of any dog that Jim and Ivana had that hasn't decided they like my jackets.
Yeah.
It's, I used to come in here and Buddy would, I'd throw my jacket on the couch. And I knew he was going to be asleep in my jacket when when we went out. That was just a common denominator. And Speck,
yeah.
You want to hear an interesting story? Tell her about the skunk cake.
Well, I made a skunk cake, or I made a cake for Pat for her birthday. Well, Jim was out hunting and shot the gun. Well, the kids came flying in, and I was melting sugar to make the cake. Well, Jim had decided he had to go to the bathroom. The kids came flying in with the dog, and he'd been sprayed with a skunk.
The dog got into a skunk dog, and here the dog was right with him.
Oh, no.
And I made the cake, and we took it on over, and that cake smelled, when they put it in their mouth, tasted like skunk.
Oh,
smelled.
Really? Oh, wow. Ugh.
Well, it's, you know, it's one of the, and I remember the, one of the German Shepherds I had when we were in Big Rapids. Pat made one of those cakes with a hole in the middle. Angel food type cake.
Uh-huh.
And she cooked it a little bit too long. So she knew that I liked chocolate cake, so she chocolated the whole thing. Well, the kitchen was in the, we were in a trailer, and the kitchen was raised, and Pat gave cake to myself and Kelly, and she's standing up in the kitchen a little bit higher than we are, and I'm watching Kelly, and the dog's laying alongside me, and I tried the cake, and so I held a fork full of it down to the dog, and the dog, you know, and then he smelled it, backed away from it, and from behind me I heard this voice say, "Eat it, you son of a bitch, you can't be that bad." So we've got that, the dogs have been part of the equation. And how many Great Danes does your family have now?
John, or Paul has two, and John had three, but he had to get rid of one because it attacked the other one.
Oh.
And he had to put Johnny Cash down.
Mm.
And he's got one now.
Well, Alan's got one too.
Well, John, Alan's got German Shepherds.
Yep. Well, we have to get Monica back to her dwelling.
Oh, this was so fun. Thank you. Thank you very much. I really appreciate this. I always learn so much whenever I go anywhere with Eddie. So.
Yep.
Yep.